approximately 10:15, the date being the 17th of March, 1984. The place is the Alaska Supreme Court hearing room located within the court building at Anchorage, Alaska. This is a continuance of a hearing began 2 days ago in Juneau and continued to Barrow yesterday and started here again this morning at this hour. Matters at hand in a continued processing before the committee are House Bill 140. House Bill 140 is an act authorizing capital punishment, clarifying murder in the first degree as a capital felony, and establishing sentencing procedures for capital felonies. House Bill 571, which is an act relating to the number of Superior Court and District Court judges and providing for an effective date. And House Bill 698, which is an act relating to marijuana and providing for an effective date. Sitting immediately to my left is Robin Renner, who is one of the staff counsels to the House Judiciary Committee in Juneau. Normally the committee would have not just myself, but at least a member from the minority who would be representing Don Croxon, who is scheduled to be here today, but is not. He would be sitting to my right. As a means of scheduling the matters for the committee today, we would like to begin hearing testimony on these matters with House Bill 571, and if we could have remarks by Judge Moody, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ralph Moody. I'm a Superior Court judge in Anchorage. In regard to House Bill 571, I think it's quite appropriate. In fact, we're in a situation today we usually are in getting new judges, particularly in the Anchorage area. We needed them before we even brought it up and asked for them. We've needed, in my opinion, the secretary judge for at least a year. And I don't think there's any question statistics will support it. And I'm sure that there's no basis in which anyone could say that we're not padding the judiciary from the standpoint of the people we need here. If you look for padding, I'm sure you can find it some other place in the judiciary, but not in Anchorage, because not only in the reading part, of course, it's pretty obvious. If you can believe the newspaper and the business reports, we know that we're increasing tremendously in population in this area, and increasing population increases the court work. And also, if you increase the number of police, it increases the court work. So I highly recommend that this additional Superior Court judge be granted.
Those conclude your remarks, Judge?
Yes.
Judge, are you familiar with, maybe I can ask you one question before you leave, with House Bill 560 and 561?
I've read them, yes.
Could you possibly just candidly comment what effect you think they'll have on something like this? Should we be considering more district court judges at this time?
I don't associate it with a number. Would you mention the title?
560 and 561 are two bills that affect the court system. One of them raises the small claims value to $5,000 from its present level, and the other one raises the court's jurisdiction from the now $10,000 to $50,000.
I think it will increase it tremendously. You better increase lots of judges when you increase that.
Thank you, sir. And Judge Carl Johnstone, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Carl Johnstone. I'm from the trial courts in Anchorage. I have a letter from the presiding judge, Mark Rowland, who is out of the country right now, and I'd like to read that letter as his remarks.
Certainly.
Dear members of the Committee on the Judiciary, I regret that I could not testify in person because of prior personal commitments to my family. I hope this letter will adequately convey my thoughts to you in support of the court system's request for two new Superior Court positions in Anchorage, one this year and one next, which I believe are urgently needed. I know that Chief Justice Burke conveyed this request to you in the State of the Judiciary address he gave some 2 weeks ago. I previously have forwarded a letter to you, which I believe outlines the statistics which support these additional positions. I would like to augment those statistics with some subjective impressions which I believe might be helpful. When people think about the responsibilities of the Superior Court, the criminal caseload tends to occupy a higher profile than does our civil caseload. Trials involving multiple murders, rapes, narcotics, sexual abuse of minors, and other notorious crimes vividly reported on an almost daily basis in the media often divert attention away from the myriad of other important responsibilities that the Superior Court handles. At present, in addition to the criminal caseload, the Superior Court handles mental commitments, domestic relations, domestic violence petitions, probate matters, juvenile dispositions, habeas corpus petitions, and a general caseload in addition to those matters that presently exceeds 5,500 cases. This civil caseload is growing at an alarming rate. It is my subjective impression that these cases become more complex and take longer to try or process today than they have in the past. The reasons are many, and we can only guess at some of them. The population in Anchorage seems to be growing visibly to those of us who live here. I, like many people, suspect that the population figures, which are from time to time reported, are understated. More and more people bring disputes to the court system for resolution, perhaps because many of the social institutions within which disputes were traditionally resolved have, to some degree, become less effective in this role. There is an increasing awareness of the availability of the court for redress of grievances, both public and private, and we have lowered the economic barriers which formerly served as the court's gatekeeper, allowing many persons and classes of persons to have ready access to this institution for relief. New remedies are being constantly fashioned for old and sometimes previously unrecognized grievances. All of these factors and more have resulted in increasingly complex disputes ending up in the courts. The system itself has established priorities, some formal and some informal, for the processing of cases. The most significant for purposes of caseload management require that criminal cases take precedent over civil matters and that they be tried within 120 days. The reason for this priority is obvious, and it is honored. The number of actual felony trials have increased several fold in the last 4 years. This is probably a result of an increasing transient population. Unemployment, more police on the streets, and other similar factors coupled with the plea bargaining ban and mandatory and presumptive sentencing. What this means to the court system is that we will be required to divert more and more of the existing judicial resources to handle this expanding criminal caseload. The anomalous result will be that criminals will have ready access to the courts, while ordinary citizens may have to stand in line to have their day in court. It may be a hackneyed phrase, but nonetheless true, that justice delayed is justice denied. In instances where cases arise out of the commercial community or involve persons who have suffered severe compensable personal injury, unconscionable delays may make any favorable result meaningless. It is the feeling of the bench that non-criminal litigants should have a meaningful right of access to the courts which this state supports. In the absence of these additional positions which we are requesting, I have serious reservations about our abilities to continue to deliver the kind of civil dispute resolution service which the public is entitled to expect. I recognize that in the era of decreasing revenue and increasing demand for public services, the legislature has a responsibility in making difficult choices. I believe, however, that the requests that we have made are responsible and consistent with our duties as public servants. I expect to return to Alaska in March 27, 1984, and will be available to answer any question you might wish to ask me thereafter. Signed by Dr. Rowland. Mr. Chairman, I have just a very few remarks, and it's just to give you a little historical background from the day I came on. I was appointed in late 1979 to the bench by Governor Hammond. At that time in Anchorage, we had approximately 1,400 attorneys, and we had 8 trial court judges. About the same time, we enacted through the legislative process the new criminal code. The new criminal code added presumptive sentencing, which in many cases made it more difficult to process criminal disputes through the...
Would you like to wait until we can locate that sound? It sounds like there may be an overzealous judge mending out punishment downstairs in this time.
Seems like it stopped.
Mr. Chairman, I've called down there. I think it should stop in a couple minutes.
Okay. Thank you. We enacted a new criminal code. Domestic violence legislation was enacted about the same time. And we had the continuing ban on plea bargaining. We were severely behind at that time in processing civil cases. I don't know if you remember or not, but at that time we had a mixed court where every judge was doing criminal and civil work, and the civil cases took precedent, and many times the businessman or the individual who had a civil case being processed through the system was bumped out of a trial date to accommodate a criminal case, which was up against the 120-day rule. We were fortunate we got 2 new judges in 1981, and that took up a lot of the problems at that time. We now have about 2,200 attorneys in the 3rd Judicial District. We have, instead of 600 cases per judge, civil judge, we now have about 1,000 cases per civil judge. In 1980, we could process a case in 6 months. Now it takes probably a year and a half. So we are getting backlogged to the point where we were in 1979 when I came on. I don't consider this a crisis in the traditional sense. We're still able, in my opinion, to process the court's work. We will continue to do that. Certain things get priority. Criminal cases get priority. There are certain cases by statute that get priority. We are going to continue to process, in my opinion, the court's work. It's going to be at the expense of somebody, though, and I think it's going to be at the expense of the average civil litigant, the businessman whose livelihood depends on resolving disputes in a quick manner. And I think that it's going to be the average civil litigant who's going to suffer and who's going to be delayed in using the court. But we're going to continue to process the court's work with or without additional judges. It will make things easier for everybody if we have at least one additional trial court judge. So that's all I have to say, Mr. Chairman. Is there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Johnstone. Any questions, Representative Foxer?
One way to take some of that pressure off, of course, is to attempt to divert cases into an arbitration system or something similar to that. What efforts have been made in that area by the court system?
None that I know of. And that's a good idea, and I think that I think the trial court administrator and the administrator of the courts are looking into that. I think it's a good idea to find other means of resolving disputes outside the court. It's been tried in other states, and I've been told that it's been successful in other states. I think it takes legislation to do that, though. I would like to see a long-range plan in that direction, frankly.
Well, let me just say that there's no questioning your facts and the backloads that are building up. I'm extremely concerned about repeated requests for new judges if there is no effort in that direction, the direction of arbitration or other less formal methods of resolving disputes. I'd sure like to see more of that. I think you'd see considerable support in the legislature for any legislation necessary to implement a plan that would reduce the backlogs in that manner.
Well, I hope we do that.
Thank you, Judge. Next we have Judge Elaine Andrews.
Good morning, Chairman Bussell and Representative Coxon. I'm here on behalf of the Anchorage District Court judges. Both Judge Anderson and Judge Tucker are unable to be here today, but present in the courtroom and able to answer questions if you have them are Judge Full, Judge Mason, and Judge Finn. I have been a district court judge since 1981, and I am the assistant presiding judge in charge of the calendaring in district court, and I have had that position since 1982. I'm known as the calendaring judge, the assistant presiding judge, or I occasionally refer to myself as the captain of the sinking ship. I'm here to give you a summary of what has occurred in the Anchorage District Court since 1975, the last time a district court judge was added in Anchorage. I think that we should probably talk about both the civil and the criminal aspects. Our major civil filings are in the area of small claims. Understanding that it's been almost 10 years since a district court judge has been added, I can report to you that looking at the last 5 years from 1977 to 1982, the increase in small claims has been from approximately 3,000 to approximately 5,000 small claims, an increase of approximately 172%. I can also advise you that we have stopped calendaring small claims in district court because of the crisis that we're having with criminal cases. And at the beginning of February, the first date that we could give to a small claimant was June 15th. We have simply stopped putting them on the calendar at this time, and we are searching for other methods to have them heard, which includes magistrates and law clerks. We have simply taken them off the district court calendar at this stage because we cannot continue to process them with our increasing criminal caseload. The other civil cases which we try are those which are above small claims, but in the range of the $10,000 limit that currently exists. We have set up the court for 3 weeks of criminal trials and one week of civil cases. In other words, we do 3 weeks criminal work, 1 week civil work. That's the way it's been set up. I can report to you that we have been unable to reserve a civil week since I've been the calendaring judge. We routinely try criminal cases through civil week, and I can report to you that this civil week, we've had to take a judge off the civil calendar in order to try a criminal case on the 120th day. The other major civil case that we handle are called FEDs, forcible entry and detainers, otherwise known as eviction actions. The present wait for a landlord or a tenant who's received an eviction notice to be heard in the district court is approximately 2 weeks. We have been able to devote only 3 judge days a week to that. And so for people who need some speedy access to the court that waits at least 2 weeks, in those cases where 2 weeks of rent is going by while the parties wait for the court to get to their case. In the criminal area, I can report to you that the search warrants have increased 538% from 1975. We have gone from 99 in 1975 to 350 in 1982. I should also be fair and tell you that we have a committing magistrate system, which is an addition from 1975. But at least with regard to the search warrant area, those committing magistrates have only been able to absorb approximately 185% of that increase. So it truly is a net increase in that area to the district court. The DWI problem, of course, involves both the bulk of the filings and the bulk of the time allotted to business in district court. And once again, I don't have the figures from 1975, which is the last time we had a judge, but I do have them from 1977. And those figures reflect a, between 1977 and 1982, an increase of 276% in the filing of DWIs. I think it's a figure which is interesting to me is that in 1977, there were approximately, I believe, 657 DWI arrests. In a three-month period from December 14th of this year until today's date, there have been over 700 DWI arrests. So in the last 3 months, they have arrested more people for DWI than they arrested in the entire year of 1977. So the increase is significant. Part of that increase, obviously, is due to the fact that the police department has increased approximately 160% from 1977, that their area of concern, at least the Anchorage Police Department, has gone from 31 square miles to 110 square miles. All those cases, of course, come into the Anchorage District Court. That's an overall view of what has happened to us since 1975. The review of the daily problems, I think, will give you a better idea of what life is like in the district court for both the judges and the people who come to court to have their cases heard. Every morning we have arraignments. That's the first proceeding when a person has been charged with an offense to come in, listen to their rights, and tell the judge what they want to do, whether they want to plead not guilty and go to trial, or whether they want to plead guilty and be sentenced. We are averaging approximately 40 people out of custody every morning, 25 people in custody every morning. Our trial call is the time at which all those people who have said they want a trial come to court for us to sign out a judge. And we set a trial calendar at approximately a ratio of 5 trials per judge per day, knowing that, of course, not everyone who wants a trial will go to trial. I can report to you that every single day between now and June 15th is overset. That is, I have set more cases than I know there are judges by a minimum of 5 every single day between now and June 15th. If you came to me and wanted a trial today, I would tell you the first available non-overset day is June 15th. That is the trial setting situation. Because we overset the calendar, we have what's called a trailing calendar. That is essentially people stacked up waiting day by day for the availability of a judge. And I can report to you just taking this week, which I think is a very typical week, we currently on the calendar have 11 trailing cases. Some of those have been trailing since Monday. What that means is every police officer, every victim, every witness involved in that case is on standby every day from 8:30 to 11, day after day after day until we can get a judge available. We have 11 cases now waiting, and we start civil week next week. We will try those 11 cases through civil week, and that is a very typical situation that has existed in the court for the last several years. When we finally do get to a case, obviously most of them are not tried. Approximately 13 to 18% of the DWIs which are actually filed really go to a jury trial. That means that we dispose of the remainder of DWIs by a change of plea. I think that it's important to note that because of the number of cases that we are processing, the average DWI, the average person who comes to court charged with a DWI, will get somewhere between 5 and 6 minutes of a judge time. A judge is sending a person to jail, telling them about important penalties, significant decisions are being made. The judge has to spend a certain amount of time telling them about the rights that they're giving up. That literally leaves the court approximately 2 to 3 minutes to hear from the prosecutor, to hear from any victims who are interested in talking to the court, to hear from the defendant or the defense counsel. That is not an exaggeration. That is the amount of time we are giving to people who are brought before us, and that's all the time that we can give them. the result of this stacking up of cases, although it's not particularly a court concern, it is something that I think is important in the overall view of how people look at the criminal justice system. In talking to the police department yesterday, they advised me that they have paid in 1983 $2.5 million in overtime to their officers, 51% of which is court overtime, and I can assure you that a good deal of that is because of the trailing calendar in district court. I am concerned about the view that witnesses have, that other citizens have, of telling their employers, I have been scheduled for a trial 3 or 4 months from now. I need this day off. I need to perform my civic duty. And then the prosecutor says, don't bother to come in on the day that it's scheduled because we don't have judges available. We may need you tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes and they call back and they say, we can't go today. We may need you the next day. And by the time it comes to court, people who are interested in prompt, fair resolution of cases are incredibly frustrated by the system, both sides, both the prosecution, the defense, and the court. It is really, I think, an intolerable situation to continue. The other thing that concerns me is that this method of running the court increases the cost to people who are willing and able to hire their own attorneys. Private counsel are charging more and more for criminal cases to be tried in the district court because the attorneys know that they have to come back to court day after day waiting for a judge, and they pass that cost on to their client. And when a person goes to an attorney to say, will you represent me on this DWI, the minimum fees are extraordinary, which means that more and more public defenders are being appointed. So it isn't, the immediate impact is only part of the problem. I think that this committee has to look at what the far-ranging impact of the situation is. And obviously, if the case can't go on schedule, attorneys have scheduled their time not to conflict with other court time. If the Superior Court needs an attorney, we have to defer to the Superior Court. So the inability of the court to try the case on the day which it has been scheduled causes a tremendous impact. That gives you sort of a thumbnail sketch of what I think our problems are. I'm happy to answer any questions, or any of the other district court judges. I might be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Judge Andrew. Representative Foxman?
Well, I have several questions. Let me ask the same one I asked earlier. What efforts are there in your court to implement any sort of diversion program through arbitration or other less formal means of resolving disputes?
I have personally sat on the conflict, alternative conflict dispute committee instituted by the Bar Association. I was on the board of the Conflict Resolution Center for a period of time. We have implemented information in the small claims area advising people that there is a non-judicial forum by which they can get speedy and complete resolution of their cases. So to the extent we have been able to do it by advising people of other sources of dispute resolution, we have been doing that.
What, isn't there something further that can be done?
I agree with you. I think that, well, the fact of the matter is that the workload is essentially being pushed downhill. In other words, as the cost of litigation increases, there's got to be some method of moving the more complex cases to the people who are most qualified to hear them, and moving the least complex to the people who have the least training. And that is really what's happening. And I think that we're looking at something that used to be court business, small claims, probably falling into some sort of arbitration proceeding with attorneys being the arbitrators. And then I can foresee if the business gets worse that someone else besides attorneys are going to be arbitrators. I agree that some simplification of the process can and should be accomplished.
Well, I should have maybe continued my questioning a little bit at the Superior Court level, because my concern is exactly that a new emphasis on arbitration at the lower level, at small claims court, is basically going to end up meaning that the average citizen, the court is not for that person. That person will never be in court, will never have access to a court, and will be forced to some other proceeding, while the person who has all kinds of money to pay to go into Superior Court is going to be able to utilize the system. So I guess you're not the one to ask, but it seems to me that not only should there be effort to divert small claims cases, but to divert some of the more serious cases, the cases in Superior Court. And the other comment I want to make is that it seems every time we come up with an idea or a proposal in this area, everybody manages to shoot it down, and it would be a lot better if the people who are intimately involved, such as yourself, developed an idea. If legislation is what's necessary, I wish you folks had put it together and bring it to us. That way we'd at least have a sense that it was supported. I think simply providing information isn't going to be enough. If I can ask a,
certainly,
a couple of other questions, trying to focus on some of the elements of the system that are causing the problem. Let me ask a couple of questions about DWIs. It's not clear to me exactly how the ASAP program is working. Are they having an impact one way or the other on backlog of DWI cases? What's the role of the ASAP program? Is that system slowing down the process, speeding up the process? What's your comment there?
It doesn't slow down or speed up the process, but I think the most recent report that I have seen indicates that people who have gone through the alcohol screening program are less likely to recidivate. That is, they are at least keeping the repeat offenders from coming back. So to that extent, they're minimizing the workload. Generally speaking, they are a post-conviction source of treatment available to the court. And so they don't delay the time between arrest and conviction. They simply provide a method of treatment. And of course, we need to be notified if the person doesn't seek treatment. And to the extent they don't and we have to arrest them, it takes up some court time, but I think all the judges agree that that's warranted court time.
It's not adding to the backlog, and in the long term, it may be reducing the recidivism.
I think in the long term, there's no question, but it's reducing recidivism, which is reducing our ever-increasing caseload.
Another question. There was some criticism or discussion a year or so ago about policies, particularly in municipal cases, municipal prosecutor's office, of taking cases to trial and having them dismissed at the last minute. I was reminded of that issue because of your problem of overscheduling. And obviously overscheduling is because a lot of cases are dismissed at the last minute and you have to kind of bet on it. It's like overbooking in an airline.
Exactly right.
Would you care to comment on how that's coming since last year or so when it was a matter of some concern?
I have seen as more and more serious cases come into the system, a tightening up of the screening process. That is the decision by the prosecutor whether or not to prosecute, that has occurred, and I have seen tightened screening. It's once again one of those questions of priority. As more and more DWIs come in, everything else is falling out, and that is obviously something that concerns me. DWIs go first, and if something has to go, it's going to be the shoplifting or one of the other cases which the prosecutor believes to be less serious. We can't process them all, and something is going, and that's clearly what's happening.
A final question that doesn't directly relate to the bill before us or the backlog problem, but since you're here, you mentioned that, I don't even know what period of time this was, that 40 of the people that appear before you on arraignment, I guess that was a given day or a week or whatever, were people who were not in custody,
right.
And 25 of them were people in custody. I've recently received some statistics that indicate that there's an extremely high percentage, again in municipal cases, where a person is, there is the authority to cite them, issue a citation, and have them go home and come back for their appearance in court. There's a low percentage of those, and in fact what's happening is many people are spending time in jail at that preliminary stage. This question doesn't relate to backlog so much as it does backlog in the jails. But could you comment on, based on what you know that comes before you, could we, by increased use of the citation system, reduce the burden on the jails by encouraging the release on citation rather than making them spend the night?
To some extent, that can be done. I see quite a few coming in by way of citation. Most of the people who are in custody are maybe I should backstep a little bit. We have a committing magistrate system, so a person is brought before a magistrate within a very short time after their arrest, and the magistrate either releases them or holds them over. My view in seeing the people who come into my court in custody in the afternoon suggests that those people have properly been held in custody for one reason or another. In other words, they are multiple DWI offenders and they have significantly high bail, or they're felony offenders. The magistrate who's doing the bail setting could not get the sufficient information to release them because they were too intoxicated to give the information, and by the time it's 1:30 in the afternoon they've sobered up and we can get the information and if appropriate they're released. So I think the committing magistrate system has contributed greatly towards reducing the number of people who are in custody, but probably an increased use of the citation system would aid that process. We do have a significant higher percentage of failures to appear in the citation system, however. It may be the citation itself could be improved. It's It looks like a traffic ticket and it has lots of little writing and people don't see the date and time for court and they issue a lot of bench warrants for people failing to appear on citations. And not because they're willfully not there, they just don't read the fine print.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Representative Coxon?
No.
I have really one question while you're here, Judge. Maybe it's partly a comment. You know, you seem to display some distress with the increased number of DWI cases that are being tried by the court. The legislature, at least parts of it anyway, reacted to the DWI situation from the chaos that it was creating in the community and in my opinion, the failure of the court and its judges to react within the limits that they had available to them to stop that. The legislature imposed stronger DWI rules. And I think the results are apparent. We recently published in the newspaper just in the last few days that even though the number of arrests have went up, we haven't had any deaths as a result of that. And that's something at least some of us are proud of. I hope that the deterrent value from the increased sentences will eventually show up in slowing the number that come before the courts too. But somehow the carnage caused by these people and the destruction in families and other ways have just simply got to be slowed. And more judges just doesn't seem to be the answer there. We've got to have stiffer punishment to stop society from abusing that privilege of drinking. Together we got to attack that problem. We can't attack each other as a result of it.
I have no quarrel with the law that you passed. I only ask you that you give us the tools to process the people who are arrested under the law. My distress about the number of DWIs is not that they're being arrested, simply that we are having trouble processing them. I don't quarrel with you on that.
But I'd like to slow the number that you had to process.
I would too.
I don't know where that magic answer is, whether it's in increased punishment yet again, or maybe in the judges taking more liberties with the punishment they have at hand to help reduce that number coming across their threshold.
The only thing I would point you to in response is the most recent survey released by the Judicial Council, which suggests that in 1981, since 1981, the judges have been uniformly imposing penalties uniformly higher than have been currently authorized by the legislature. So I think that piece of information should be considered.
Yeah, I did consider it. Right. Thank you, Judge Anderson. At this time, Al Saul has a comment to make on behalf of Judge Cerdeley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Claxton. Judge Cerdeley is tied up downstairs at this time with in a jury trial, and he asked, with your permission, if I might be able to read his remarks into the record. And before I start that, I'd just like to say to you and to the rest of the people here a very happy St. Patrick's Day. Dear Chairman Bussell, I regret that I am unable to personally attend and testify at the hearing regarding the pending legislation seeking authorization for additional district court and superior court judges. With this letter, I wish to summarize the comments and testimony I would have provided at the hearing in Anchorage on March 17, 1984. By way of background, I have been serving as a superior court judge in Anchorage for over 3 years. I am, and have been, assigned to the civil division of the court during all of this time. I earnestly support the Alaska court system's application for at least one additional Superior Court position, and ideally more than one for the Anchorage Superior Court. Since coming to the bench 3 years ago, I have seen my civil case load, meaning non-domestic, non-criminal cases, increase from approximately 600 cases in April of 1981 to approximately 1,100 cases at the present time. In addition to to an absolute increase in the number of cases, it is also my impression that there is an increase in the complexity, length, and expense of the civil cases that are now being litigated. Thus, for example, I have spent the last 4 months trying two cases, a prisoner's class action case that lasted 7 weeks, and a securities litigation case that lasted 11 to 12 weeks. In the latter case alone, the parties filed 50 to 60 volumes of pleadings, exclusive of certain discovery documents, presented in excess of 3,000 documentary exhibits at trial, filed innumerable motions before and during trial, and took at least 15 petitions for review to the Alaska Supreme Court. Although this latter case may be an extreme example, it is my impression that in the last year or so, the court system has experienced a relative increase in complex civil litigation. Besides the cases mentioned above, during the last year I've also tried a class action civil rights case that lasted 5 to 6 weeks and a wrongful death action that lasted 4 to 5 weeks. During the next 12 to 14 months, I have currently scheduled for trial 4 cases which are expected to last 1 month or more in duration, including a condemnation action of approximately 4 weeks, a personal injury action of approximately 4 to 5 weeks, a wrongful death action of approximately 5 weeks, and a commercial insurance litigation case of approximately 8 weeks. The impact of larger caseloads as well as lengthier and more complex civil litigation on the trial calendar is obvious. The 4 months of trial time I spent on the 2 cases mentioned above consumed nearly 40% of the total available trial time on this year's calendar, thereby making it impossible for other cases to be tried during that period. Further, delays in obtaining trial sitting conferences and trial dates are increasing at a substantial rate. Currently, a trial which would require more than 2 weeks could not be set on my trial calendar until mid-April 1985, a 12 to 14 month delay. I am informed that most of the other civil judges' calendars are in approximately the same circumstance. Additionally, it is my impression that more cases, including the complex cases, are proceeding to trial rather than settling or being disposed of by some other means. This means that the judges will tend to overset fewer cases per week. Several years ago, when fewer cases were proceeding to trial, I was oversetting 3 to 4 cases per week. Now that more cases appear to be going to trial, I am oversetting only 1 to 2 cases a week, and in some instances, not oversetting at all. This, of course, means still further delays between the commencement of an action and the trial date in the action. The increase in cases and trials also impacts adversely on the court's time and resources available for non-trial matters which require judicial attention. Thus, for example, during a typical day, a civil judge would hold trial from 8:30 a.m. through 1:30 p.m. During a luncheon break from 1:30 to 2:30, the judge will typically meet with his or her law clerk and review emergency matters which must be considered that day. Then for the remainder of the afternoon, the judge typically would have scheduled settlement conferences, trial setting conferences, oral argument hearings on motions, oral argument hearings on agency appeals, evidentiary hearings on injunctions, hearings on domestic violence petitions, and other emergency matters. In view of the foregoing hearings, it is not uncommon for a judge to run well into the early evening before completing the day's activities. In addition to trial matters, hearings, and conferences scheduled during a typical day, the judge must also deal with numerous matters submitted to the court on motions or briefs without request for oral argument or hearing. A rough estimate of a typical day in my chambers is that we receive and are required to give attention to as many as 2 to 3 dozen matters per day. These matters would include motions on briefs, including discovery motions, dispositive motions, motions for sanctions, motions for to amend pleadings and the like, stipulations, emergency motions, and appeals on the briefs from administrative agencies or entities. The court must also deal with, as a matter of priority, domestic violence petitions. Such petitions are typically being handled through hearing time in the courtroom, although the judges are on call 24 hours a day. Given the increase in cases and increase in complex cases, the number of matters submitted to the court on the briefs has also dramatically increased, and consistently the delays in issuing rulings on such matters have likewise increased. For example, it may take months to issue rulings on summary judgment motions or agency appeals that have been submitted to the court on the briefs without oral argument. In order to perform all the foregoing tasks, the court has an extremely limited staff consisting of 1 full-time law clerk, 1 secretary, and the judge. In my view, substantially additional assistance is and will be absolutely necessary in order to process the increased workload in a prompt and professional manner. At a minimum, it seems to me that additional Superior Court judges are immediately required. Ideally, additional support staff, including further law clerk positions and or externship positions, would be extremely useful. In the absence of additional judicial manpower, it seems to me quite realistic to expect that the already substantial delays in processing cases through trial will become even greater. Ultimately, I suppose, it becomes a policy question on how much delay is too much delay. I respectfully submit that for Alaska's population, and particularly for the population of the South Central area embodied in the 3rd Judicial District, delays of 1.5 to 2 years to get cases to and through courts are unacceptable. Longer delays are obviously more unacceptable. Accordingly, the thoughtful attention of you and your committee to the pressing need for additional judicial manpower will be greatly appreciated. Thank you sincerely for your consideration of these remarks. That's all I have, unless there are any questions. I have copies of the letter that I made that I'll give to the in-court clerk for you. So.
Thank you, sir. Representative Clarkson, I'd like to direct the
Two questions, if you can answer them, sir. On the domestic violence temporary restraining orders, my understanding that those are largely being handled by magistrate now. You, in that testimony, referred to them at least a couple of times as being matters coming before a Superior Court judge. I thought the procedure was that a magistrate's been handling most of those.
Well, it depends. All the domestic violence petitions have to be reviewed by a Superior Court judge, regardless if they're filed during duty hours or in the evening hours. And I believe that what Judge Serdaley was specifically talking about here is that during the day, a Superior Court judge has to review the petition after it's been filled out and the individuals have, the petitioner's been sent upstairs to the courtroom or to his chambers. And the domestic violence, the number of petitions filed have increased greatly. I believe he's talking about that time during the duty hours. Now, he did not mention that after hours, what happens there. Judge Andrews alluded to or spoke about the committee magistrates that we have on duty 24 hours a day. The petitioners initially make contact with the court system after duty hours and on weekends and holidays with the committee magistrate. The committee magistrate aids them in preparing the paperwork and filling out the petition, but then he is required to contact Superior Court judge at home or wherever they can be reached. And so that's the extent that the Superior Court judge get involved in it. Now, the hearing that is scheduled after that, the 20-day hearing, those are handled by our, particularly mostly by Andy Brown and Cindy McBurney.
Right.
So
it does clarify that the Superior Court judge is not conducting hearings then. He's simply reviewing the request for an emergency TRO.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Second, the broader question, there is an existing statute that provides that a judge's salary is terminated or delayed if any matter is left with that judge for a period of 6 months without any judicial action.
Yes.
Have we seen any sign of increases in terminating salary because of backlogs? Any problem in that area?
Representative Clarkson, I can't really respond to that because I don't have all of the information. I'm aware of a couple instances where the salaries were held up for a period of a month or two, or at least a month or two. The overall statistics, I believe I'd have to get those. I could get those for you, but I don't have those in the back.
But it would be an indication that of an increasing problem.
Surely.
If the number of salary terminations were increasing.
Oh, surely.
But you're saying there doesn't appear to be a...
Well, there have been. I haven't really looked at that in terms of, you know, related to the...
I'd sort of like to find that out, if I could.
Right.
I'd like to find that out, if I could.
Okay, I'll get that information.
Thank you.
Thank you. I thought we had that. I was just quick looking for it, but maybe we don't. It's over. I think we asked for that from somebody, and I think we do have it. If I don't have it with me right now, I think I already have that somewhere. I thought maybe I had it in one of these documents in response from the court.
Okay, would you want me to contact your respective offices?
Sure, if you just
appreciate
that's why I'm almost certain that we have it in Juneau. But
fine, okay, I'll check first.
I don't drag all of the stuff we have there out here. We have boxes and boxes.
Okay.
If there are no further comments made to you, I thank you very much.
Okay,
sir.
Thank you.
Teresa, I hope I don't pronounce your last name wrong. Is it Teresa Obermeyer?
Yes.
Teresa has a time constraint, and we'd like to work her into this lengthy list at this time.
Good morning, Representative Bussell and Representative Clarkson, and you, sir. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Teresa Obermeyer.
Constraint, and we'd like to work her into this lengthy list at this time.
Good morning, Representative Bussell and Representative Clarkson, and you, sir. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Teresa Obermeyer. My maiden name is Nangle, Representative Bussell. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. I am a judge's daughter. My father was on the bench for 45 years in St. Louis, Missouri. My uncle is currently on the federal bench in St. Louis, Missouri. I have five brothers who are attorneys, four of which practice law in St. Louis, Missouri, one of whom practices law in Anchorage, Alaska. Everyone in my family, all my sisters, my brothers, my cousins, everyone in my heritage is an attorney. I happen to go into education. I have a PhD in education. And coming to Anchorage, Alaska, I worked at the University of Alaska, and I'm not going to go into a lot of the details, but I just want to give you this by way of introducing myself. I'd like to also thank you, Representative Bussell, for all the publicity that you got in the newspaper in the last few years. It has been very educational. And honestly, Representative Bussell, all I want to say, very frankly and very simply, is I am an angry, concerned citizen. Do you understand what I'm talking about, sir?
I don't know. You'll have to elaborate.
Okay. For example, Representative Bussell, a week ago, I was over at the meeting on the corporations, your conference hearing over in the Legislative Affairs Office. And I remember a man that taught law school at the University of California, Davis, saying what an altruistic bar we have. We have an altruistic bar. These judges are being used every day of the week by these lawyers. Every day, Elaine and John, Mr. Judge Johnstone and Judge Moody, they are using us. And this is really all I wanted to talk about. If you have questions of me, I would be glad to answer them. I'd like to just make one final point. And I think the attorneys and judges here understand this better than anybody. And that is, in my opinion, the bar and the judges should be in their jobs to set precedents, not to try cases. You are there to be the example to the citizenry. And really, that is all I have to say. If anyone would like to contact me, I'd also like to spell my full name and address and give my phone number. It's Theresa, T-H-E-R-E-S-A, Nagle, N-A-N-G-L-E, Obermeyer, O-B as in boy, E-R, M-E-Y-E-R. I reside at 3000 Dartmouth, D-A-R-T-M-O-U-T-H Drive, 99508. My phone number is 278-9455. Do you have any questions, sir?
Teresa, we're here to take testimony, and if you'd like to clarify something, we'd be happy to listen to it. Do you have questions, Representative Coxon?
No, that was really all I had to say, and honestly, I appreciate, Representative Coxon, you're allowing me to say something. And Aaron, go wrong.
Thank you, Teresa. We have Stuart. Is it Bigler? Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Representative Boston Coxon. I guess I represent a participant and a user in the court system. And, a year ago, I had a son killed by a drunk driver, and that really affected my life. And it's the first time I've ever had a real close look at the court system and how it runs. Because of that accident, I became a member of the Municipality Drunk Driving Task Force, and so I'm one of the people in the background keeping the screws on the police department, on their enforcement of DWI, and of course looking at the district court and how they're handling the cases and learning as much as I can about the system. The sentencing of the fellow that killed our son will be March 28th. That's 5 days short of a year after the accident happened. It stretches out in time because of the calendaring problem, because of delays, the manipulation, I guess, or the way the attorneys go after their cases. They ask for delays and for one reason or another, and once you get the delay, then because of the calendaring schedule, it's a good number of weeks or months till you can get back on the calendar again. So it's a long time till a person like myself and my wife see justice done. 5 days short of a year, we're waiting on the criminal side. Within the task force, then I've chaired the prosecution committee, and under the activities of that group, we've looked at what the courts need, what's happening in the court system, in an overview kind of a thing. And it's certainly clear to me that the workload is very substantial and staggering, that people are absolutely overloaded in work. And you look at things like the trailing cases that say, hey, we're just making it on the last day. You look at the paperwork. On any one day, I understand, there's something like 500 cases waiting to be typed. So there's a lot of backlog in the processing system as well. The entry of data into the Alaska Justice Information Computer System takes 60 to 90 days. So during that time, records are inaccurate. I will certainly support the need for help, additional judges as well as I think, in the clerical staff that goes on, the work that goes on behind the courtroom. And the arbitration panel may be a way to handle speeding up handling of cases, but the productivity of a judge, it seems to me, is beyond their control in a lot of ways, that it depends on these appeals and delays and postponements and the actions of the defense attorneys. And you've got to give the accused their rights. And that imposes in itself a lot of inefficiency in the court system. The other point I want to make is in the civil case we have, it's the trial date is 17 months after the accident. And in the meantime, witnesses disappear and memories fade, and it's hard to develop a case and because of the long delay. So 17 months is what we're expecting on the civil side. And there ought to be a way to get this cleaned up so that people like us can get on with our lives and put that behind us. And I think that we depend on you to do that and to help people like myself. And, I think I should stop there.
Thank you, sir. Representative Clarkson, do you have any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Bigler, I guess I'd like to take the opportunity to ask you questions about the process you went through in the last year. I'm co-sponsor of some legislation on victims' rights.
Yeah.
You may be familiar with the prime sponsor is Representative Flood.
Sure.
Were you informed, you said that you went through a variety of delays and hearings and such with regard to the criminal matter. Were you informed of all the hearings that were scheduled in that case?
No. You can't get that information. I have a phone call in right now to the prosecutor's office on the trial date because it had been changed. And it's been a week I'm waiting for a call back. I found out other ways, but you can't get that kind of information. The few days after the accident, the only way we could get information of what was happening was in the newspapers. You can't call anybody and get anything. They won't tell you anything. And I guess they're trying to protect the case that they're building, and maybe you have to do that, and what they're really doing is making it making certain that their case is going to hold up and somebody like me doesn't start compromising it by things that I learn. But you can't get information out of the system. It's very hard.
I guess that answers the second question, and you weren't informed of the hearings, I gather, then you weren't informed when hearings were delayed or postponed. Weren't always, let's put it that way.
You probably always are. What happens in the grief cycle is that you have a lot of trouble. I have a lot of trouble with memory. And I can't recall a lot of events that have happened in the last year. And as time goes on, that fades. And I don't think I should say that I haven't heard in all cases, because I just can't recall all of them. But I know that we're having trouble. It's very hard to get information, and you have to seek it out yourself quite often. And if you do that, if you learn who to call, you can find it out.
Did this case go to trial, or was there some...
No contest plea.
No contest plea. Yeah. Have you participated in any way in the preparation of the pre-sentence report?
Yes, we were interviewed, my wife and I were both interviewed for the pre-sentencing report, and I thought that it gave us a good feeling that we had that opportunity.
Has that report been completed, and have you seen a copy?
It's been completed, but we have not seen a copy. I understand we're not going to see a copy.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else present that hasn't signed one of the sheets down front that wishes to make a statement on House Bill 371 or 571 here today?
If I may, please.
Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, my name is Justin Ripley. I'm Superior Court Trial Judge here in Anchorage. I did not intend to speak today, but just to come and be part of the hear or answer any questions that you might have. A couple of comments from here, I believe, were perhaps not as fully touched upon as might have been. And if I can, I'll just go down the list that I've generated in the last half hour or so. As far as this issue of domestic violence hearings, the domestic violence during the duty day, Those domestic violence petitioners have access directly to the first available Superior Court judge. And in order to give some stability and predictability to the judicial day here in Anchorage, and to make sure that they're not waiting unduly, we have evolved a system whereby each individual judge is responsible during a given day. Some judges have set it on for a specific time each day, you know, 11 and 3 or something like that. I try to have them wait and get to them on the breaks that I take from my regular trial business. But each of us handle them differently. Some judges go on the record with every single one, so it's not quite accurate to say that the judges themselves are not conducting hearings on the DVs. I tend to swear them in chambers and do it more expeditiously that way, but I just wanted to clarify that one point for you. Arbitration, Representative Clarkson, is a concern that you have, and there are two points I'd like to make on that. Whatever alternative dispute resolution mechanism we go to, it has to be made final, made binding. That was the problem that, we all had, that was before my time, they all had great hopes for the Uniform Arbitration Act. But what that did, of course, was they'd go through arbitration and then into Superior Court for review. So whatever alternative mechanism is put in place, it has to be final and binding. The point was made back there in the judge's corner when you were asking for input from the judges, I'm sure you weren't trying to be critical, but it sounded like, where are we? You know, where is the judge's committee? Where's the judge's proposal? The short answer to that is, sir, here in Anchorage, even as we try to keep the ship that Judge Andrews was talking about afloat, there is no time during the normal duty day to meet with committees. That's one thing all the judges found. They were much more active in their professional and public life before they got on the bench. And as far as evening meetings, here it is a holiday. Judge Serdaley is in session. Other judges are on administrative leave. It's a busy world, and so whereas I'm sure we can't point with pride to the judicial committee, the judicially proposed solution, one of the reasons that was voiced back in the corner, and I agree with him, was where's the time to do that? As to 571, I'm not going to re-ring the bell on that. We all support additional judges. I would like to underscore one thing, is that when here in Anchorage, when we started talking about approaching you gentlemen for additional judicial mentor, we were talking to Superior Court judges at that time. It was reduced to just, I guess, out of our experts' assessment of what was truly possible. But even Justice Burke in the State of the Judiciary said we'll be coming back next year for another one because we see the need. Please remember that, as one other judge said earlier, that at least, I guess it was Judge Serdaley, at least one additional is what we're after. As far as 561, 560, raising the jurisdictional amounts in small claims in district court, probably, even with the district court calendaring problem, cases which normally would have been filed in Superior Court and would still be authorized to be filed in Superior Court would move there, and that would, I think, vastly impact the problem that Judge Anton was talking about. So it would, I think, geometrically increase the district court's needs for additional manpower. Are there any questions that I can answer for you as long as I'm up?
Representative Coxon?
Well, if I could, two things. Back to the arbitration question, of course. My point of view, I agree that you're obviously overwhelmed with work, so there's difficulty in meeting on policy matters like arbitration or alternative dispute resolution, which is a better term. But, you know, if the long-term effect is to reduce the number of cases in your court, maybe it's a good expenditure of time. Mm-hmm. At any rate, that's not worth arguing about. But let me ask about some of the policies around that. Do I take from your testimony that there would be generally support among the judges for a binding arbitration statute?
I believe so, yes. Just not having thought it all the way through, the immediate, I foresee due process challenges of one kind or another, but I feel like it would be dealt with. Yes, I think the testimony here and my own personal feeling is that, yes, there's uniform support for that.
What about requiring certain cases to go to arbitration rather than a court, which is the second step in that?
Mm-hmm. if that's part... You'd find no philosophical resistance on the part of judges, not having given any considerable thought to the due process aspect of that. I'm just kind of formulating in my mind quickly what the challenges might be. That's aside from your question. Philosophically, I don't see any problem with that.
And finally, the statement, I guess, that I made to Judge Andrews, that would the judges be inclined to implement an alternative dispute resolution mechanism for the lower level cases or for the higher level cases? And I think I made my position clear that
if all you do
is make sure that all the small claims court cases are going to arbitration, basically you're going to mean that the normal citizen, the guy with a dispute with his landlord or his neighbor, is not going to go to court. That's going to be the basic, what's going to happen. And I'd be interested in an alternative dispute resolution mechanism that deals with the more important cases, more complicated cases as well.
And I think in that respect, if you made it mandatory, the more complex, the more valuable, let's say, the case or right or asset, I suspect the more due process related challenge would be raised to it. But philosophically, again, I don't guess I've ever discussed it with any of my fellow judges, but I can foresee no philosophical resistance to that. I mean, a territorial hold, we want to remain the only game in town? No, we'd like to see society's business handled however it is done, so long as it's fair and fast.
Okay, on the question of the bills, there has been, if you just simply look at the records, there's been a tendency, particularly outside of the 3rd District, of reducing the number of district court judges and replacing them with superior court judges. We have the tendency then in the 3rd District to do just the opposite, or at least not replace district court judges. Could you comment on, as a matter of philosophy, on the idea that maybe we ought to get rid of or reduce our emphasis on limited jurisdiction judges and go to unlimited superior court judges to do all the business?
Perhaps it's the effect of the day. Right? I'll get a little bit poetic with you. Look behind you. That great seal and the breadth of the territory it represents and the relatively isolated communities that still exist is why I think we've gone to a general jurisdiction judge. And that's why Anchorage is not. We pick Valdez, where there's one being created. Most of the business generated there falls within the jurisdictional range of the district court and is quite properly handled by such a judicial officer. But a significant or at least a recognizable and amount of business falls in the felony level or in the superior court jurisdictional level. And that requires travel out. It requires delay handling those matters. It very often results in those cases being shipped to Anchorage, right? Any case worth its salt is not handled by the practitioner in Valdez unless he comes to Anchorage to do it, because that's where the other lawyers are, that sort of thing. And so I think you will find that in the outlying areas, that's probably not a good term, but in the non-Anchorage areas, they've gone to general jurisdiction, single judge, because it reduces these various delay factors I'm talking about. And here at Anchorage, you don't have the need for it. The same with Fairbanks. They've not taken reduced district court and increased superior court on a philosophical basis. I think it's geographic and practical and regional.
Okay.
Well, other events begin taking place in those areas with a greater degree of regularity that required superior court action.
Absolutely.
And as the populations grew and the demand for those services.
I thought that's what I was saying. Perhaps I wasn't clear enough, but as the demand increases.
If there was a reason why I supported that last year, even putting a superior court judge there, and it was that reason alone. I'm glad that you made comments, Judge Ripley, about 560 and 561, because I do think those are important pieces of legislation. I do think that they'll go rapidly through the system. And tied with this request for judges, in the manner in which they appear here in 571, will likely change in number before they, probably before they leave our committee. I was going to ask Judge Andrews to come back, but maybe I'll ask you while you're here. Have you familiarized yourself or viewed the fiscal notes that accompany this bill in its present form?
No, sir, I have not. I would defer to Judge Andrews on that.
Okay.
Anytime.
Well, I'll just explain to you so that everybody understands, and then ask her, too. There are four fiscal notes that have been given to the committee to date regarding these bills. And
which bills?
They cover everything from the court system to the Department of Public Safety to right on down the line. And it's confusing and hard for me to separate away sometimes the additional four troopers required, for instance, on the Department of Public Safety, when I can listen to the testimony that says the additional troopers are required now because of the mix-up in the court system, and if we straighten all that out, everything's going to go smoother. On the other hand, the Department of Public Safety says that the creation of this, they don't view that as straightening it out. They're going to have an additional four troopers just to handle it, and sometimes that's confusing. If we could get a remark from the court system in regard to that, it may help out. If you don't care to comment on
that. I can share with you certain specific instances in my experience which would tend, in my judgment, to support, I believe, additional trooper manpower. I don't know that's not going generically to your inquiry, though. I'll try it if you want.
Well, I can ask Judge Andrews, too. One of the things that we suggested to the court system when they were looking at their rework of their electronic system here last year was more emphasis placed on maybe TV or electronic arraignment and stuff to unload some of the court system, and that seems to have kind of bombed out. I haven't heard anything more about it. Further inquiry seems to get just a shake of the head, and we don't seem to get anywhere.
The last time I checked on it, the rewiring, the upgrading of the electronic system, I didn't mean to get the microphone and scare Madam Clerk there, I understood, out for bid, several months ago, a request to meet an in-house committee to evaluate certain proposed equipment lash-ups came through, and I put my name on it. It turned out that the committee met when I was out of town, and so my presence on there wasn't required, but I understand that the process is ongoing.
Good. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Any remarks for the record you'd like to make?
I don't know. Let me take some counsel.
Judge Johnstone.
He just left.
Well,
I wonder if all present would indulge me. This comes under the heading of a war story. It's a letter that I dictated in haste almost a year ago because I was so angry about what was going on that one particular day that I cornered my good friend Chief Justice Burke in the hallway and thought better of what I was saying to him about workload and other things, and then I called him up later to apologize, and we had a talk on the telephone. For a year, I was going to finish that letter and send it to him because it contained things I thought worth saying. I have not, in this year, have at least conveniently come across what I call enough priority three time to finish the letter. I mean, this comes in the heading of nice to do, right? Priority one is crisis, survival stuff. Priority two is the day-to-day business that must get done today, and priority three is when I get to it, and I didn't. And I found it almost a year later. I'll briefly deal with the exhibits that I was going to send when I did finish it. One of them was a rough timesheet that my in-court deputy was keeping at the time of my bench time. On the day I dictated it, I got 5 hours and 3 quarters on the bench. If you're not familiar with it, I advise you that on the bench time, in hearing time, is a lot like aviator time, time in the air. There's a certain amount of wind up and wind down and preparation time for every hour on the bench, so you can at least take a factor of almost 2 on that. 5 hours and 3 quarters that day, 8 hours and 25 minutes on the record the day before, 3 hours and 25 the day before that, but that was a court holiday. 8 hours and 25 before that, 2:25, 7:55, 25, so on through the week. I've been having those kinds of days, and so I set myself a year ago to do something I've always wanted to do but never followed through on. I got myself a little tape recorder and talked into that thing all day long. So I had a record. You know, you've all asked yourselves, I'm sure, where did my day go? And I had that kind of an exercise. And that was a two-page exhibit. Some of it's pretty slangy, but it accounted for every minute of my day. It also accounted for the file count. You heard Judge Serdaily say that in his civil practice, he sees 2 to 3 dozen files per day. And those are, by and large, there's not much that's totally routine in those. They all require attention. Some of the files I saw that day were simply requiring a judge's signature. They were they were recommended for approval by a master, and once you saw very briefly that they were in order, you signed them. The point is, I dealt with 79 files that were of that nature, and I dealt with 15 files that day that required at least an analysis and decision. That's in addition to the trial day that I had. That's how I got into this. You asked about the impoundment of judicial salaries. I think it's a matter of some embarrassment to those of us to whom it happens, because even though we feel that we really hit it as hard as we can, there is a feeling that we could have done better. If I can digress for just a moment, I don't know how much weight you can place on that. That's a 6-month cutoff. If you have an individual decision that you haven't reached in 6 months, or anywhere approaching that, you're creating a problem for the system, even though your wages haven't been held up, is my point, I think. As far as, is that system followed? Yes, it is. Unless we sign that pay affidavit the 15th of every month, our pay check is held up. But for the fact, last month, that I took a case under advisement on the 18th rather than on the 14th, I wouldn't have been paid last month. Since I've gotten that done, I know that it's common to have judges here in Anchorage that running up against the 6-month rule. Finally, a year ago when I wrote this letter, part of my frustration was that I hadn't been paid for 2 months, and I was in trial every day, and at the end of the day, I did not have sufficient resources left to decide the two things that were holding up my paycheck. I wanted a few days off, and there were emergency things that had to be heard. Okay? Let me read this letter and stop. I'm often brought to these things as a sort of light relief. I hope that you take this in the proper spirit. Dear Chief Justice Burke, you can tell by the length and style of this message that it's not a full-blown official letter, but it says a couple of things that need saying, if only to memorialize a bit of research I did on how I spend my day. As you know from my telephone call to you last week, the subject of judicial workload is very much on my mind these days, and this is for several reasons, not the least of which is what I perceive to be the adverse effect of my present situation on my health, the quality of my work, my social and family life, and my paycheck. Let me preface my remarks with 2 observations. First, since I know from your State of the Judiciary message you are aware of the judicial workload problem, and since I suspect that the subject comes up routinely in a majority of your conversations with other judges, please do not dismiss this message as merely another recognition of the facts of life about which nothing can be done. To put my situation in terms of an aviation analogy that we both can understand, things could be worse. I'm not picking up ice, I'm not on fire, the turbulence is only moderate to occasionally severe. I derive some strength from the realization that I volunteered for this mission, feeling it to be a worthy one, possibly even essential, and that I knowingly took the calculated risk that there would be breaks in the overcast somewhere en route. However, I'm long past the point of no return. I'm not full IFR or de-icer equipped. The tops are above my service ceiling. I'm too low for radar assist or reliable readings on my nav gear, and I've been adjusting my directional gyro periodically based on my experience with its normal rate of precession, but have been unable to verify the reading because I am operating in an area of magnetic compass unreliability. I'm between layers, night's approaching, and while I have better than 1 hour's fuel remaining, the cylinder head temperature is at the red line because I've been running with the mixture at full lean. I'm pressing on with as much confidence as I can maintain, but the grip on my seat cushion is now quite firm, and I conclude that unless a fortuity occurs, I will have to declare that emergency, start my descent through the rock-filled cloud, recognizing that only the only remaining consideration is how best to survive the inevitable crash. In short, I'm not calling May Day, but that point approaches inexorably. The second preparatory observation, at long last, is much more succinct. I do not contend that I am uniquely overburdened or that the burden of the days that I shall describe shortly resulted from an unwillingness on the part of my judicial brothers to bear their fair share of the load and more. And I think to emphasize the fact that the load hasn't changed, I didn't get back to that letter in the last year. Thank you. Are there any questions?
I don't have any questions, but that sounds like what could have been written by some legislators also.
Thank you.
Lane, can you come and we'll discuss the fiscal notes just a minute? I'm sorry I didn't do it while you were here. I was going to run track. Are you familiar? Have you gone through these?
I have been asked for a court system response to the proposed legislation on increasing the jurisdictional limits in district court. I'm not certain if my responses were incorporated in the fiscal note, however.
Excuse me before we go. Which fiscal note are you talking about? The ones on 571?
The 571.
Right. I've got four notes here on 571.
There are four notes on 571 that you have.
571 being the
increase in the number.
Right.
One from the troopers, corrections, Department of Law on the court system.
Yeah, the Department of Law has a fiscal impact starting in 85 at $292,800, which includes a number of more full-time positions. As a result of, it's hard for me to decipher that. You know, if the caseload isn't going to change, maybe the number of judges is, but I can maybe understand some impact, but maybe not that much. And then the Department of Corrections has another one, and again, beginning in 85, they have a number of full-time positions that they're asking for again.
This is this contract on raising the civil jurisdictional limits?
On corrections.
To corrections?
Yes, 571.
On the legislation adding judges.
Oh, on the legislation adding judges. Okay.
The court system, of course, is... the court system one you're familiar with. You've likely been seen that. That's the $727,400 additional. And then the Department of Public Safety has another one. It's half as big as the court system request, $327,800 for fiscal 85. Again, adding, I believe, three more troopers, more clerks, etc., to service this increase.
I'd note that there is no fiscal note from the public defender.
That's right. And obviously there will be a public defender fiscal note somewhere.
If there's an impact in these,
yes.
There's obviously an impact on that.
I think the court is being sort of a three-legged stool. I can't move forward without a prosecutor. We can't move forward without a public defender. They can't move forward without a prosecutor. So clearly the impact is on both sides of the litigation fence.
Are you familiar with these things?
I am familiar with the court system fiscal note. And I'm happy to answer questions about other fiscal notes if I can answer.
What I wanted to do is make you familiar with them, and I want to make sure that you've got copies of them and that you're aware of them. And, you know, I'm certainly not a politician, and the whole legislative process was something new to me, and I'm not going to be asked very long. This is just a one-term affair for me, and I'm trying to do the best job I can, but it seems to me like particularly things that affect the courts. You know, they come through the Judiciary Committee, and we may decide to do one thing or another. Like I remarked earlier to Judge Ripley, that I'm concerned with the numbers because of the other legislation that's in the process right now, and I think the numbers ought to be adjusted. I honestly believe that it, or should. And likely, quite frankly, because of my position, they'll likely be adjusted as they leave the committee.
Okay, my question was, I guess when you said that the numbers being adjusted upward or downward?
Upward.
All right.
They'll be increased. Which will, of course, increase these fiscal impacts. But then it has another committee called Committee on Finance that it has to go through. And, of course, all of these things are rather difficult to reconcile. We don't have a lot more time in this session. You're certainly aware of where we are in the session. And so in order to have this be a reality, any increase, this session, we have to work a lot closer together than we have been. And I guess another in response to, I believe it was Judge Ripley, maybe, I can't remember which one of you made the remarks about you know, wanting to get together. I can absolutely assure you that any time that you want to discuss, at least with this committee in this House, goings on or what can be done to alter laws to help change or to make them better, that I, or at least a good share of this committee, will come to Anchorage and sit down with you at night, on Saturday, on Sunday, or if it's possible to rearrange the legislative calendar to do that, we'll do that. We've been willing to do that all along, and I'd like to make that perfectly clear.
We appreciate that.
Even what's short left in the session. Believe me, we are trying to reach out, trying to make it better, not trying to patch it. And I'm getting that feeling that we're being forced to kind of patch it and thinking we're doing the best we can, and maybe we can do better if we work closer together. We can do something about the state we're in if we work at it.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. If your concern on the fiscal notes, if I'm hearing what you say, are that we've asked for more judges, and when we asked for more judges, a number of people responded how that would impact their agency and put fiscal notes on. I guess I have two things to say. The fiscal note on new judges is something that's easily calculated by salaries and so on and so forth, by simply adding the judges. I want to be very clear from the district court that we are asking for two judges simply to survive the criminal impact, the impact of the criminal cases. If the legislature is proposing to raise our jurisdiction, I think there are two things the legislature has to consider. One, I've told you, we are not setting small claims in front of judges. If you are going to raise, the limit to $5,000, you have to understand that people with $5,000 claims under the system as it exists will not be heard by judges. And so that is it's up to you. It's your decision on how you want to operate. But I just think that that's a fact of life you must be aware of if you intend to increase the limit. The second matter is if you increase the limit to $50,000, personally speaking, to me, I think that that would be a good thing because it will make my work more interesting because $50,000 cases are legally more complex and intellectually more stimulating. On the other hand, we can very quickly dispose of cases in the range that we're getting them. They tend to be in the neighborhood of $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000. They have virtually no discovery done in them. We can dispose of them very quickly. They can be settled very quickly. If we are going to be taking cases up to $50,000, the method by which we dispose of cases is going to look more like a superior court than a district court, which means we're going to have discovery battles and depositions and so on. So I have no personal objection to raising the jurisdiction. In fact, I have some personal interest in having it happen just from my own working situation. But I want to be very clear that if you're going to do that, the two judges you are giving us are going to be, they will not be put to that civil area. We have got to get away from 119 and 120 day trials, and that's what we intend to use the judges for, is the criminal matters, simply to get them somewhere to where we can try the cases.
I guess that's the point I'm trying to make.
Right.
I think these other two pieces of legislation are going to pass.
And if they do, all I
have... We're going to have to look at these numbers now.
Right.
And one of the reasons I'm here today to talk to you is to get to increase my confidence that we have to do that now. We have to double the amount of judges on that level that you want.
Once again, it's your decision to... It is within your purview to decide to raise the jurisdiction. If you do this, simply give us the tools. We're happy to do the job. And what I'm saying is, if you're going to raise our jurisdiction, I cannot conceive that we could absorb that increased caseload without an additional two judges. That would be my perspective, knowing how civil cases work in district court and what's being filed in superior court. On the other fiscal notes, which other agencies have attached, to the extent the troopers have said, we need more help if you have more judges, the one area I can comment on is that the troopers are the people who bring us prisoners. And so if we have more judges doing trials than we have people in custody who are being tried, we have got to have troopers sitting in the courtroom all day. And so to the extent we have to move more and more bodies back and forth, I can see some reason behind the fiscal note. I think I'm also hearing your concern that the judges are saying with more police, they're filing more cases, and the police are saying with more judges, we need more police. And I understand your frustration with what appears to be an unending escalation. I can say without a doubt, we do not control our own caseload. Our caseload comes specifically from arrests, and the only people who arrest are the police. So with more police, our caseload increases. We will need more transportation officers, more troopers to do the transportation work if we have more judges. I think that's undisputed. If we have more judges doing more trials, we can't move forward without a prosecutor, and that's probably where you're getting a fiscal note from the Department of Law. And the prosecutor can't move forward without a public defender. So I'm assuming somewhere in the system is the public defender note. So to the extent that they're saying with more judges we need more attorneys, I think that is a legitimate statement on their part. Whether the numbers are right or not, I would not be willing to comment on.
I guess because you're the calibrating judge and obviously are more involved in this, and particularly at this level than other judges, I need to make you aware of these fiscal notes and of a bunch of them in there. I guess I need to indicate to you that I'd like to talk to you within the next few weeks as this stuff proceeds.
I'm at your disposal. Anything you want to know, I'm happy to give you the information. I'm happy to find the information if we don't have it. I'm happy to go to Juneau and testify before anybody you want me to testify before. I'll do what you want because we need the help. I mean, it's just, and we need the right kind of help in the right kind of place. And I appreciate that you have consulted us about that because I think what the judges are reacting from is laws being passed and no one considering it. Someone has to hear them, and I appreciate your concern of asking us what our reaction is if you pass the law, because that is something that we have not heretofore had much input on, and we enjoy the opportunity to give you the input. So if you ask me, I'll for sure give you the answer.
Well, Judge, once again, let me try to make a point, and I hope you understand, that where we are in a session, we don't have a lot of time. So we have to work closer together to make sure that we get the result that we start after. Because if you drop the ball, or if we drop the ball, I can absolutely assure you that at the end of this session, we won't be where you ought to be.
Right. But you can call me any day, any time, for any need, and I will get the answer to you as quickly as we can possibly get it to you. And I will assure you from our end, we will not drop the ball. You tell us what you need, we'll get it.
Okay. Thank you. Make sure that you have copies of these before you leave today.
Yes.
That will help. Thank you. Is there anyone else present at this time that would like to make a statement on the record concerning House Bill 571, which is not relating to the number of Superior and District Court judges? If not, the... Carla? Thank you, Carla.
Representative Buffalo, I'm Carla Forsyth, General Counsel to the court system. I know that I was present in Juneau on Wednesday when you opened the hearing on this, and I held my testimony until this time. Since you were just discussing the fiscal notes, I wanted to give you a couple of thoughts about those, and I'll be glad to provide my copies to Judge Andrews. I reviewed those notes very closely with Mr. Zoll, who testified earlier, the area court administrator. It was his belief that the note from the Department of Law and also the note from Public Safety probably are accurate in terms that those two agencies do have a need. However, there are a couple of concerns about the corrections note, very specific concerns. One relates to district court. On page 2 of that note, the analysis discusses the addition of 7 judges. Really, only 2 judges are being added, although the figure would appear to be 7 because the statute hasn't been revised since 1959. And since they used that figure to calculate a full-time caseload for a probation officer, I think there could be some reduction there. Additionally, the corrections analysis assumes that the new Superior Court position will be hearing criminal cases exclusively. And the analysis further indicates that for each new Superior Court criminal judge, there's a need for one probation officer who would write pre-sentence reports and for another caseload supervisor. The intent is to allocate that position half to the criminal caseload and half to the civil caseload. So based on that intent, it might be quite possible to reduce the fiscal note for those two positions in half. Other than that, that note did appear to be accurate. And as I indicated, I'll be glad to provide a note to Judge Andrews if she can look over them and give her comments to you as well. My second comment relates to your question about what the court system is doing in the area of TV and video arraignments, things like that. There is a rule change that has been proposed. This is sort of uncharted territory, and we want to go about it in the correct way so that we don't see lots of challenges. We have a rules reviser who has prepared a draft on that. There is a committee, and that should be coming out in pretty short order. We want to make sure that we do it right, and we should see some far-reaching changes in that area. My third comment would be to Representative Clarkson with regard to the arbitration. At an earlier hearing, we talked about the National Center for State Courts report on simplification of civil litigation, and there was some discussion of how you might get a copy of that. I don't know whether you do have a copy.
I do, yes.
But that committee did discuss arbitration. I don't have a copy right now, and I don't know what they said, but I think they did analyze how that might be of assistance to the court. The recommendations in that report are going to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will be considered.